Hi, Monk Podcast listeners. The following is a sample of the Monk Members Only Podcast. To access the full-length edition of this episode and all of our regular Monk Members Only Podcasts, go to our website, www.monkdebates.com, and register for membership. Membership is free, and it's available for you right now at www.monkdebates.com. Hope you enjoy the program. Hello, Monk members. Rudyard Griffiths here, your host and moderator. Welcome to this, our usual Friday Monk Members Only podcast. This is the program where we provide you in 30 minutes or so with a look at the big issues and ideas shaping our world. We focus on three topics that we think are of importance and interest, hopefully leave you with some new analysis and insights. Our guide, as usual, is Janice Gross-Stein. She's the founding director of the Monk School of Global Affairs, an internationally renowned scholar and author. Janice, always great to have these conversations with you.
So good to be with you, Rudyard, and also so good to have gotten several great emails from Monk members. Keep them coming.
That's right. podcast@monkdebates.com. Send us your comments and questions out of today's show, past episodes. We really appreciate that feedback. Janice, we're doubly fortunate to have you as our interlocutor this week, as every week, but especially this week, given your deep knowledge and expertise developed over a career of yours that has spanned decades now related to the Middle East. The biggest story, I think, globally these past 7 days has been this rapid acceleration of a conflict between Hamas in the Gaza Strip and the government of Israel. And maybe we could just start by getting your sense of how did we arrive at this point, and how has this conflict ramped up so quickly over really just a span of a few days? To an uninformed observer like myself, this really seems like it's come out of nowhere.
Interesting that you put it that way, Rudyard, because this was both a surprise and not a surprise. A surprise because the operating assumption was that Hamas does not want an all-out fight where infrastructure gets destroyed once again. Israel does not want an all-out fight with all the knock-on effects that come from inflicting casualties on civilians. And the lid has been kept on this for 7 years. The last time it boiled over like this was 2014, and that's an eon ago. Both sides have moved on from that. Here's where the unexpected happened. This is an internal issue that blew up and Hamas latched on. It's an internal issue that started around, frankly, a totally misguided process funded by private trusts to buy houses in East Jerusalem and evict families that was heading toward the Israeli Supreme Court. From that touched probably the rawest nerve in the Palestinian community and with legitimate justification, frankly. And it was those pictures that got circulated that led to, I think, a second series of events, also so misguided. One was the deployment of the police force. We have seen in other contexts what happens, Rudyard. When you let police loose, they don't have the same training, the same bigger picture sense of where to stop. And this started at the Damascus Gate, which is the gate where traditionally young Palestinian men congregate and spark local violence. The police went in with an over-heavy hand. Again, you take a smaller incident and it blows. But the really, and frankly, I'm just going to say this, dumb move by the police was to break up a demonstration inside Al-Aqsa Mosque. That is, you know, the symbol, to the Palestinian and to the Islamic world, no matter who's throwing stones from inside the mosque. No matter what the provocation, if you have a bigger picture and you have a sense of discipline, you don't respond to that. You put all those together, perfect storm, starts locally and goes global in this sense. I will only say this to our members as we are watching these terrible pictures, and they're terrible from every perspective because there's community violence now in cities like Lod and Acre and Haifa, where, you know, there have been years of intercommunal Arab, Palestinian, Israeli living together, and these towns have exploded in the last week. As you're watching this, there are intensive mediation negotiations going on. The Egyptians are there. Behind the Egyptians are the Qataris. The Americans now have an envoy on the ground. So we're watching this, in a sense, awful dance that all the big players in the region, including Hamas and Israel, do not want this to blow. But it's this constant tension of who stops first, under what conditions, and who gets the most out of it. And in the meantime, the people on the ground are just paying a terrible price.
Mm-hmm. The situation where it is, though, let's say the last 72 hours with literally hundreds, I think we're now maybe into the thousands of rockets fired by Hamas into Israel. I mean, Janice, what state would tolerate that? I mean, just to imagine a situation in Canada where, as we've seen in Israel, our parliament was closed because of the risk of rocket fire attack. I mean, the reaction surely of any state in this circumstance would be to reestablish security in some ways, no matter what that involves or entails, because your country simply can't function as a free and open society to the extent that Israel is. So, you know, give us a sense of how you think this plays out. We've had in the last 12 hours or so reports of Israeli troops being staged along the Gaza border. You know, is a ground incursion the next phase of this?
So you're actually right when you move up from the community level. And, you know, as you were talking, Roger, I had images. So let's just paint this picture for our members that are listening. If you think back to the Black Lives Matter movement that took to the streets in the United States this summer, there was certainly justification. But imagine that there were countries on the border of the United States that saw that and for their own political purposes lobbed 1,500 missiles into Washington or New York City. You would get a sense of the dilemma that is working itself out right now in the Middle East. That's the closest analogy I can think of. You know, one important thing to say, what Hamas did, it's two things. One, the president of the Palestinian Authority, Abbas, canceled elections one more time. That is a source of the frustration that you're seeing in the streets. So let's not discount that. There is no way for Palestinians to express their frustration on a whole set of issues. They were looking forward to elections. At last, this was going to happen. Canceled yet again. So part of this...
elections that Hamas would have likely have won.
Of course. So all of a sudden, Hamas has the field now. Abbas canceled elections. Hamas is lobbing rockets. Huge political victory for Hamas in this situation, number one. Number two, they fired about 150 rockets in the first 5 minutes. Why do that? Send a message to the Israeli armed forces. We really upped our game here. We couldn't do that 7 years ago. We can do that now because they're manufacturing rockets at home. That message was received. And so then you get a counter move back and you're in this trap of escalation. Interesting that those troops are staged along the Gaza border. They have not yet gone in. Both Hamas and Israel recognize that once those forces go in, lose for both sides. Lose for Israel because the pictures of civilian casualties, the number of Gazans who will be killed, will go literally around the world. Lose for Hamas because, again, if infrastructure in Gaza is destroyed, the Qataris who've been paying to rebuild, you know, they've thrown their hands up more than once and said, we're not doing this every 3 or 4 years. We're not going to finance rebuilding. We're in this these next 48 to 72 hours are going to tell us a lot. Mm-hmm. Can they pull back from the brink?
So Janice, just finally on that, what about the situation in Israel? Because to me, it seems like a kind of Barbara Tuchman Guns of August moment where you have the worst dynamics in place on both sides, pushing, egging everyone on towards conflict. And one of those dynamics, surely, is that Benjamin Netanyahu is facing his final defeat if his opponents in fact can form a government, but he has the peril of a serious anti-corruption investigation and a court date to face. What's holding Netanyahu back? What's holding back the elements in the Likud party that have always been very aggressive, assertive with regards to their security position, Israel's security position vis-a-vis Gaza? And then, as you say, on the other side, what does Hamas have to lose for continuing this? I mean, they are showing the Palestinian people that they are the only ones willing to stand up and fight. As you say, this is political manna from heaven.
You know, for Hamas, this is a gift only if they stop soon before the infrastructure in Gaza is destroyed. That's what the rule is for them here. For Netanyahu, and I say this with some cynicism, Roger, I'm borrowing from you here. This is a gift for Netanyahu. His political opponents finally got the call from the president to form a government. There is one of the leaders of the right-wing party, Bennett, so hates Netanyahu, he was talking about going into a government with the center and the center left and an Arab Islamist party. 24 hours into this, he stopped. He put a halt to negotiations, Bennett, and he is back now talking to Likud. This is Netanyahu's path to remain in power yet again or to have another election this summer. Big win for him. So you look at this and you have to be, I think, naive to the extreme not to believe that political dynamics are playing themselves out here. Now, Netanyahu, the final comment here, does not like to use force. He has repeatedly, over his career, pulled back. So he's an odd combination of a verbal hawk, but somebody who, when push comes to shove, pulls back. He's innately conservative and worries about the unintended consequences of the use of force. That's why those forces are along the border, but they're not over.
Right. We'll have to watch. And just the final thing on this, I know we're short for time, but this is just the big issue this week, I think, for us to discuss, and the opportunity to do this with you, given your deep area expertise, is a privilege indeed. I guess I just would love your comments on this intercommunal violence that we're seeing in Israel, because there has been a view that during the Netanyahu era in Israel, that Israeli democracy, that the civic culture of the country has been polarized. And it's been polarized not simply by more extremist views on the part of Palestinians and Arab Israelis, but by the emergence of the religious right in Israel as a potent political force, arguably the bulwark of Likud's coalition governments and Netanyahu's base of power. Are we now seeing the bitter harvest that was sown in Israeli politics over a decade? And are you worried that there could be something more fundamental breaking down in Israeli society with this communal violence, at really depressingly high levels across many cities, as you've mentioned?
You know, Richard, I think it is deeply worrying, frankly. The violence in these Palestinian cities inside Israel has not happened for decades. And I think both from everything I've been reading and hearing in conversations over the last 48 hours, that is what is worrying most people inside, both Israelis and Israeli Palestinians. They're shocked by this violence. And again, what you're seeing is not dissimilar from what we've seen in other parts of the world. It's not necessarily, it starts very locally. But then very quickly, people come in from outside the community. And that's when the demonstrations and the protests and the violence on both sides really escalates. This, I think, is the biggest concern coming out of this. We know how ugly intercommunal violence can be once it starts. And addressing the fundamental issues there is almost impossible without addressing the issues in East Jerusalem, for example, that sparked this latest round. There has to be a sobering reflection coming out of this. But to be frank about this, Israel has no government. It hasn't had a functioning government for over 2 years. It has a prime minister who's a caretaker prime minister, but he has not been able to form a government. If this were Belgium, we'd all say failed state, right? That's how deep the polarization goes in this society. Wow. So those are longer term, big, big worrying issues. The Palestinian Authority, failed state. So much of what we're seeing, if we just move it up a level, is failed governance in both communities and the really awful consequences of that.
You've been listening to a sample of the Monk Members Only podcast. To access the rest of the episode, consider becoming a member. Membership is free and available at www.monkdebates.com. Once you've joined as a member, go to your membership profile to access the rest of this episode and all of our Monk Members podcasts. Thanks for listening.